You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings to all. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Glad to have you listening in for our latest Monday episode. Hope everyone had a great weekend and a chance to take a breather after a crazy first week of free agency. On our Monday show, I'll be revisiting all of Seattle's moves from the past week and what to expect as the offseason progresses, plus our latest mock draft Monday with one lucky fan submission earning some Seahawks gear. Today's episode is brought your way by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCK15 and you'll get 15% off your next order. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. When the Seahawks lost to the Rams in the wild card round back in early January, the writing seemed to be on the wall that Chris Carson had played his last game with the team. He was heading towards free agency as one of the top backs on the market, and he simply wasn't going to fit into the team's tight budget when you consider all the other free agents that the Seahawks had to try to re-sign. Shaquille Griffin, they were hoping to bring back. That ultimately didn't happen. They had David Moore hitting free agency. We don't know what's going to happen with KJ Wright yet. So the Seahawks had a lot of big decisions to make with very little cap flexibility. It just didn't seem like re-signing a veteran running back was going to be a top priority compared to some of the other positional needs that the Seahawks had to address. But it turns out that ended up not being the case. And in a surprising free agency twist, Carson is staying in the Pacific Northwest after all, signing a two-year deal worth up to $14.6 million, $5.5 million guaranteed. Paying running backs a second contract in the NFL is a slippery slope, but this is a depressed market that has been created by a lowered salary cap league-wide. $182.5 million last year was close to $200 million. That helped open the door for Carson to fit into the Seahawks' budget. There weren't really any other teams presenting superior offers. He's on the market for a few days. And general manager John Schneider and cap guru Matt Thomas worked swiftly to take advantage of the situation so they could re-sign the bulldozing back. And I can see why fans would have some issues with this contract. When you consider running backs have the shortest shelf life of any position with all the beating that they take, all the carries that they pile up, it's a position where players generally are only in the league for one and a half contracts, and it's easy for running backs to hit a wall quickly and just fall off a cliff production-wise. We've seen it happen time and time again where teams have been burned by second contracts for running backs. But in this case, even though the contract shows the Seahawks can end up paying out around $7 million per year, only $5.5 million is guaranteed, and his cap hit in 2021, this is the big thing for me. He's going to get $1 million in guaranteed money, an additional $1.4 million in incentives, and a cap hit of just $2.5 million. That is 1.5% of Seattle's current team cap. And you're talking about a player that has rushed for over 1,000 yards twice in the past 3 years, and he's been one of the NFL's best running backs. Have there been some injury issues? Absolutely. You can go all the way back to his high school career. Chris Carson had a torn ACL in high school. That cost him some opportunities at the college level, including playing for the Georgia Bulldogs in his home state. He had to go the junior college route before eventually ending up at Oklahoma State. He dealt with some injuries there as well. And then in the NFL, he's had a broken ankle. He's had a cracked hip that landed on an injury reserve a couple years ago. Last season, he missed 4 games with a midfoot sprain. So Carson has certainly had some durability issues, but at the same time, he played 14 games in 2018, 15 games in 2019, and last year he played 12 games. He's been more durable than a lot of running backs in the NFL. When you even consider the fact that he has had quite a few injuries, he's been able to work his way back and he's remained productive. Even though he had less than 700 rushing yards last year, he averaged 4.8 yards per carry. That's the best average that he's had in an NFL season. He also set career highs in receiving yardage and receiving touchdowns. Every single year, Chris Carson gets better as a pass catcher, and he seems to improve in pass protection as well. He really is one of the best all-around running backs in the NFL, and he fits what the Seahawks do so well, running between the tackles, bulldozing over tacklers, making him whiff in space, catching the ball out of the backfield, pass protection. He can run wide zone. He can run mid zone. He can run downhill power plays. He truly is a all-around, very talented running back when healthy. And so I think this is a really good roll of the dice for the Seahawks. And if it doesn't work out, he can be cut next year and you'll have a $3 million cap hit. You can survive that. If it does work out, you get a really good value even next year with his cap hit jumping over $6 million. If he comes off another 1,000-plus yard year and the Seahawks are winning a lot of football games and he's a big part of it, then you can justify paying that price. That would put him just barely in the top 10 highest paid running backs. Right now, his current deal for 2021 puts him at 15th for annual value. And you're talking about a running back that has been one of only three backs in the last 3 years to rush for over 3,000 yards and score 25 or more combined touchdowns. There have only been three running backs in the NFL do that, and Chris Carson is one of them. And so you're getting one of the most productive running backs, a player that's still only 26 years old. Again, fits your offensive identity to a T. This is a really solid deal for both sides because Carson was not getting a lot of money thrown at him. Being able to get $5.5 million guaranteed, having a void year put in 2023, which would allow him to hit free agency one more time while he's still maybe in the prime of his career, he's going to get decent money from the Seahawks, and they're going to ride him. Now that he's under contract, he is going to be the workhorse again, and he's got a chance to really earn that money and incentives over the next two seasons for the Seahawks. So this really works out well for both sides. The Seahawks don't have to absorb a big cap hit this year, and they're bringing back one of the most productive running backs in the NFL. Chris Carson's going to make solid money given the circumstances. He gets to stay where he wanted to be all along, playing in Seattle, the team that drafted him originally, a talented offense. They've upgraded their offensive line by getting Gabe Jackson from the Raiders. So as long as he can stay healthy, this has a chance to really be a home run signing for the Seahawks. I didn't anticipate they were going to be able to bring him back at this price point, but this was an offseason that was going to be very unpredictable. And running backs, again, they took the brunt of the hit with the salary cap plunging to $182.5 million. So players like Carson that in a normal year might have been able to net $10, $11 million per year on a three-year contract, you have to settle for a little bit less with the way that the market is set up right now. So Seattle brings back a Pro Bowl caliber running back that really fits their scheme, and Carson gets to continue his career in a really good system for him. I think he's going to do well in Shane Waldron's scheme. When I return from the break, I'm going to recap everything that went down for the Seahawks in free agency last week, the players that left, the new players that were signed, re-signings, and of course, the Gabe Jackson trade, and what it means for the Seahawks as the offseason continues to progress going towards the draft. I'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith. Glad to have you listening in for our Monday show. We're covering everything you need to know about the Seahawks, but what about the rest of sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well, with Locked On Today. It's hosted by Peter Bukowski. It's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're already into week two of free agency and the new league year. The Seahawks didn't make any big splashes necessarily last week, at least from a signing standpoint. It's not like John Schneider wasn't trying, though. The Seahawks did make aggressive pushes to try to sign Kevin Zeitler and Joe Tooney, two of the better guards that were available on the market. Ended up swinging and missing. Those two players went to the Ravens and Chiefs, respectively. But Schneider went to work addressing a number of positional needs. Let's recap where Seattle stands as we go into the third wave of free agency. This is usually where the Seahawks make their bread and butter. Let's first revisit the losses, the players so far that have departed in free agency. The biggest one to this point, Shaquille Griffin signing a 3-year contract worth more than $40 million to go back home and play for the Jacksonville Jaguars. This seems like an ideal fit for him, playing in Jacksonville alongside C.J. Henderson, who was a first-round pick in 2019 for Jacksonville. Those two players have a chance to build, to be part of a really good young secondary in Jacksonville. That is a team that I think could really turn things around quickly when you're bringing in Trevor Lawrence as the number one overall pick, Urban Meyer coming to town. They've got some good young pieces that they're retaining. I think this is a solid fit for Shaquille Griffin. It's a big loss for the Seahawks, a guy that's been a starter in their secondary for all four of his NFL seasons. They tried to get him back. Unfortunately, the money just didn't match up. They weren't able to pay him what Jacksonville was. And this is really a good situation for him going back to his home state. David Moore being the second biggest loss, in my opinion, going to the Panthers. I know he had inconsistency issues where one game he would look like he's really ready to break out, and then the next two games he would go AWOL. You wouldn't think that he even had dressed for the game. And so David Moore was a player that was mystifying the last several seasons for Seattle. You had to take the good with the bad, but he's still only 26 years old. He's a young player. He was coming out of East Central Oklahoma, a Division II school. So he's a player that was going to take some time to develop. And I think when you look at what's left on Seattle's roster right now at the receiver position, there's a major drop-off from DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett to what remains on the roster. Freddie Swain, their sixth rounder out of Florida a year ago, is the most experienced receiver on the roster away from those two superstars. And so Seattle's going to have to do something at that position. I think losing Moore isn't a backbreaker necessarily, but again, he's a guy that has started a lot of games, played a lot of snaps for the Seahawks the last 3 years. Now you have Freddie Swain and a bunch of unproven players like John Ursua that haven't played very much in regular season games. And so it seems like that's a position group the Seahawks are going to have to continue looking in free agency to see if there's another player they can bring in it that they can bring in for an affordable rate that can replace what David Moore brought them. And of course they could try to do that in the draft as well, but they currently only have 3 draft picks. That ties their hands a little bit on what they're going to be able to do filling gaps with rookies. The rest of the players that left in free agency, Jacob Hollister going to the Bills, Carlos Hyde to the Jaguars, and Philip Dorsett to the Jaguars. Hollister was the most impactful player for the Seahawks of that group the last 2 years. He was their number 3 receiver in 2019 in terms of receptions and yardage, really became one of Russell Wilson's favorite targets. Last year kind of was in the background a little bit because of Greg Olsen's arrival, Will Dissly coming back from injury, still put up solid numbers, but wasn't as productive as he was the season before. I think this is a good move for him going to Buffalo with his former college quarterback, Josh Allen. Those two will have a chance to rekindle their relationship and add another weapon to Buffalo's passing game. I think Hollister fits their offense quite well. And with Gerald Everett coming to Seattle, he was expendable. Hyde going to Jacksonville makes a lot of sense too. He played for Urban Meyer at the college level at Ohio State, so there was already that relationship. He's got a chance to get quite a few carries there as a reserve running back behind Robinson, their starter, the undrafted rookie a year ago that put up some pretty big numbers. But Hyde's got a chance to be that nice change of pace back at this point. We'll still get a lot of carries in that offense. And Dorsett didn't play a single snap for the Seahawks last year. No big deal losing him. They were hoping they could bring him back because when healthy, he's a guy that brings blazing track speed. But he's going to be going to Jacksonville with Brian Schottenheimer, who is now the passing game coordinator for the Jaguars. So not a lot of huge losses there, but Griffin and Moore to me are the two most notable. As far as signings, outside signings, the Seahawks have made 2 of them to this point. Akello Witherspoon, former cornerback for the 49ers, a player that entered the NFL the same year Shaquille Griffin did. He was a player that had a pre-draft visit with the Seahawks. They have liked him coming out of college. And so the opportunity to bring him in on a $4 million deal for 2021, $11 million less than Shaquille Griffin, that was an offer the Seahawks are going to take. Pete Carroll is going to be excited about the opportunity to work with this kid because he checks off so many boxes they look for in the secondary. 6'3", he's got long arms, around 200 pounds. He has really good ball skills, incredible quickness coming from his soccer background. He's just a fluid athlete. He's had some injury issues, and you want to talk about a player that's had some inconsistency problems. He's had games in San Francisco where it looked like he finally has figured things out. He was going to be the starter they thought he was going to be, and then he would get benched because he had confidence issues. He just had a very up and down four seasons with the 49ers for a number of different reasons. The Seahawks are hoping that they can bring out some consistency in Witherspoon's game to go with the physical and athletic traits that he brings to the table. And I mentioned Gerald Everett earlier. Big reason Jacob Hollister is not coming back. Everett gets to reunite with Shane Waldron, who was his tight ends coach, also the passing game coordinator for the Rams. During the four seasons that Everett's been in the league, he's an athletic tight end, a guy that ran around a 4.6 40-yard dash, had an explosive vertical jump, really athletic three-cone time, sub 7 seconds in the three-cone. So he brings quickness you just don't see from very many tight ends. He's improved as a run blocker as his career's gone on. Not a strength in his game necessarily, but he's a true move tight end that Shane Waldron's going to be very excited to bring into the fold in his first year as offensive coordinator. He's a guy that can create after the catch. You can move him to the outside. He can play in the slot. He can play fullback, inline tight end. He is truly a jack of all trades at that position. It's something the Seahawks badly needed. So he should be able to make an impact right away in this offense, catching passes from Russell Wilson. And then, of course, there's the big trade for Gabe Jackson. Seattle missed on a couple other guards like Zeitler. Gabe Jackson's available, though, because the Raiders are destroying their offensive line. They also traded Rodney Hudson to the Arizona Cardinals. And so they've dismantled their line from a lot of the veteran talent that they had getting shipped to the NFC West. Gabe Jackson has been one of the better pass-protecting guards in the NFL for the last 5 or 6 years, and he's only 29 years old. The Seahawks are hoping he's still got several really solid seasons left in him. I think another reason they were excited to make this trade is he's under contract for 2 years, so he's not a one-year rental. You can bring him in for a couple years and maybe extend him after that point to keep protecting Russell Wilson. This is the type of addition that Wilson was wanting this team to make to bolster that offensive line and bolster pass protection. Did it eliminate one of your already limited number of draft picks? Yes, but it was a deal the Seahawks absolutely needed to make when they couldn't get one of those big-name guards in free agency. As far as re-signings, they talked about Chris Carson in the first quarter. That was the biggest surprise. Ethan Posick coming back on a one-year, $3 million deal. Not really that surprising either, and I think the terms of that contract allow the Seahawks to continue looking for upgrades at center. I don't think he's necessarily the guy going into 2021. That's a contract that teams would give to a player that's your sixth lineman, that versatile swing guy that can play both guard spots, center. Posick has played tackle before. He's got a lot of versatility. I don't know necessarily that the Seahawks are done making moves at the center position, particularly with the depth and talent at that spot in this draft class. Nick Ballore coming back on a two-year deal. One of the best special teams players in the NFL, so a smart move by the Seahawks to bring him back. And, of course, Puna Ford, instead of giving him a tender as a restricted free agent, they gave him a two-year extension. So now they have him under contract through the 2022 season. That's a big deal for one of the emerging young defensive tackles in the NFL, player that really is coming into his own as both a run defender and a pass rusher. You've now got him locked up for two seasons. That's a big contract extension for the Seahawks. When you look at this from a compensatory pick standpoint, the Witherspoon and Everett signings are going to cancel out the Moore and Hyde departures. Hollister and Dorsett are near veteran minimum deals. They're not going to count against the compensatory formula. So really right now, Seattle would be projected to get a fourth round pick in return for Shaquille Griffin leaving for Jacksonville. Of course, that's subject to change. If the Seahawks sign another player or two in free agency and they don't lose anybody else, they are going to lose some other players along the way. But if they end up signing several other players and they're in the plus category where they've added more than they've lost, then it wouldn't matter that they lost Shaquille Griffin. They're not going to get a compensatory pick in return. We saw that happen last season. It looks like with the number of free agents that they have hitting the market, there's a good chance that they're going to get something this year. They had no comp picks a year ago, so we'll see how that plays out. Carson's contract hasn't been signed yet, so the team's going to have to make some moves in order to fit his salary into the budget. They're currently in the red, $1.43 million over the cap per overthecap.com. We've talked about this a lot on the show. There are a few options to try to address this situation. John Schneider could restructure contracts. Russell Wilson in particular, you could open up almost $12 million in instant cap space by restructuring him. There's the possibility of extensions for players like Quandre Diggs, Jaren Reed, Tyler Lockett, guys that have 1 year left in their contract. You could extend them and push some of that cap hit to later seasons to open up some cap space right now. And of course, they could trade some players. Jaren Reed's been a name that's been swirled around a bit as a possibility there. Maybe Seattle ends up moving one of their proven veterans to open up some cap space and get another draft pick back in return. Something's going to have to be done, though, because they can't even build a full roster with their current financial situation. So somewhere along the line, they're going to make a move or two here to open up some cap space so they can continue building that roster and, of course, afford their draft picks as well. Got to have some money stashed for your rookies that are incoming. So that's going to be something that we monitor here in coming weeks as the offseason progresses. On tomorrow's show, Rob Rang and I will look at the position the Seahawks still must address and some free agent possibilities that remain available to fill those voids. When I return for the third quarter, it's Mock Draft Monday, as we do each and every week. Asked for listener submissions, we picked one winner with the stakes raised for a chance to win some Seahawks gear. I'll be going through that winner's mock draft, all the players selected, giving some grades for each individual pick. When I return, you're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. We've been telling you about Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the market for a while now. Built Bar is the amazing low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, amazing tasting protein bar with 100% chocolate in all bars. Now is the time to find out which Built Bar is the best. It is Built Bar Madness. Today's matchup is coconut versus birthday cake. Both excellent flavors, but I've got to lean towards birthday cake as the heavy favorite. Go to BuiltBar.com or to @bar_built on Twitter. Remember to use the promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off your next order. That is LOCK15 to get 15% off your next order at BuiltBar.com. And check back to see who won today's matchup and who will become the best tasting protein bar. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Monday edition. This is your host, Corbin Smith. Glad to have you listening in. The NFL draft is weeks away. It's time to start following our Locked On NFL Draft Duo. The Draft Dudes podcast watches every prospect so that you don't have to. And the Locked On NFL Draft podcast is your daily draft news and mock draft podcast. Follow Locked On NFL Draft and Draft Dudes on the radio.com app or wherever you get podcasts. It's Mock Draft Monday, as we do each and every week, heading towards the NFL Draft. We ask for listener submissions with certain requirements you must adhere to. This week, we raise the stakes a bit with a chance to win some Seahawks gear. When it comes to evaluating players, the Seahawks have always prioritized the Senior Bowl. Last year, they saw Damian Lewis dominate in Mobile, ended up picking him in the third round. The year before, LJ Collier jumped up their draft board because he had a strong week in Mobile. They picked him in the first round. The year before that, they got to see Rashad Penny coming out of San Diego State. He was their first round selection. It's been a crucial part of the pre-draft process for John Schneider and company. So keeping that in mind, for this contest, the only thing we asked our listeners to do in their mock draft this week was make sure every single pick was a player that was invited to the Senior Bowl. We got a ton of impressive mock drafts, and deciding which one was the best wasn't easy, but ultimately one stood out above the rest. Our winner for this week is Jacob Dyer. Make sure, Jacob, to reach out to us at @Locked_Seahawks to claim your prize. Jacob did a great job addressing several of Seattle's needs while recouping picks in typical John Schneider style. And every player selected was invited to the Senior Bowl, which would certainly make the Seahawks happy. Let's take a look at the draft class. This is a 7-player class, so 3 picks turning into 7. The Seahawks do not pick until pick 83. There is a very good chance that this is how things are going to play out. If we know from John Schneider's past, he's never been afraid to move up and down the board. So I would anticipate with only having 3 picks that we're going to see the Seahawks try to trade down from pick 56 at least one time so they can add a few extra picks to their arsenal. And that's what Jacob did in his draft. And at pick 83, the Seahawks finally pick in the third round. And he selected out of East Carolina, Deonte Smith, a very athletic tackle. He showed up in Mobile north of 290 pounds. That was a pretty big deal because Smith played in the 270s in college, which is extremely light for an offensive tackle. He's still a very raw player, but a great talent. Long arms, very light feet, really impressed at the Senior Bowl going against some of the top defensive prospects in college football. He looked a lot more polished than expected. And when you consider his athletic traits, again, I mentioned his quickness, his light feet, he would be a good fit to groom in a zone-heavy scheme. I don't know that he's ready to play right away. I think he still needs to hit the weight room. He's a player that needs some technical refinement. But I would give this pick a solid B at pick 83 because you're getting yourself an heir apparent for Dwayne Brown. And whether Brown wants to hear it or not, he's going to be 36 years old in August. He's only going to be able to play for so long before the team is going to need to have somebody groomed, ready to go, that can step in at the left tackle spot. Deontay Smith eventually could be that guy with the right coaching and hitting the weight room, getting over 300 pounds so that he can handle NFL defenders in the trenches. So this would be a solid pick. Again, I'm going to give it a B. I think I don't have the list in front of me as far as players who are available. There's some tackles that are more pro ready, but in terms of high ceiling prospects, Deontay Smith is near the top of the list in a really good tackle class. And then at pick 92, the Seahawks again on the board. So a couple of third rounders here. This would work well for the Seahawks. Amari Rodgers, the receiver out of Clemson, is the pick. One of Trevor Lawrence's dynamite weapons last year for the Tigers, broke out with a 1,000-yard season, 7 touchdowns. A few things I really like about this kid. Short and compact, 5'10", around 200 pounds. He looks more like a running back, and he plays like it after the catch. This is something the Seahawks have been badly missing for the last 3 years, a player that you can just get the ball into his hands and watch him go to work, breaking tackles off quick screens, quick slants, and let him just create yardage after the catch. He is built to be an NFL slot. He can return punts, has some deep threat capability, enough athleticism to be able to win downfield sometimes. Not necessarily the biggest strength in his game, but he's capable of doing that. He's had some issues with concentration drops, and there are some question marks for me from a route running standpoint. Not the most polished route runner. At times can be kind of sloppy in and out of his breaks, and he's not going to be able to get away with that as much in the NFL. Still, I like this pick a lot at 92 because this is a player that really checks off some boxes the Seahawks need to address. They need a receiver that can run routes out of the slot, that can create after the catch, and that's already been emphasized by signing Gerald Everett to the tight end position. So why not get yourself an electric receiver that can do that as well? That would really upgrade this offense. I think he's a player that can come in and give you some significant snaps right away and has the chance to end up being a really solid three, maybe in a really solid number two receiver in the NFL. With Lockett only having 1 year left in his contract, that might be a big deal for the Seattle Seahawks, especially considering DK Metcalf. He's going to start negotiating his second contract after the 2021 season. Now moving forward in Jacobs' draft, pick 97, the Seahawks going to the secondary with DJ Daniel, a corner out of Georgia. This is a player that has played a lot of press man coverage. He's played cover three. He's got 33-inch arms. Doesn't look like he's 6 foot, but that's what he measured in at. He looks smaller on the field, but he checks off the size requirements for the Seahawks. He's played in a scheme that would fit well for him coming into Seattle's defense. So there are a lot of things to like. He's had some ball production. He had 8 passes defensed in the 2019 season, but no interceptions in his 2 years at Georgia. He started off the JUCO route before ending up with the Bulldogs. Not a lot of college game action against big-name players, but he has played against the top competition in the SEC. He's a willing tackler. It looks like from an athleticism standpoint that he could play right away. Going to need some technical refinements, and at times he has issues in terms of playing the football, and he can be beaten with double moves as well. There are some things he's going to have to clean up in his games. I'm going to give this a B-. He's not one of my favorite corners in this draft class, and I think at this stage of the draft there will be some other players available that maybe fit the Seahawks a bit better, but he does have the press man corner, 33-inch arms checked off. He's a player that's a willing tackler. There are plenty of things he does the Seahawks look for at corner. Sticking with Georgia, at pick 131, I would be stunned if Ben Cleveland is still available at 131, especially with how he performed at Georgia's Pro Day. This one gets a strong A. This would be a home run pick for the Seahawks at 131. Again, I don't see him being there. He is Georgia's version of the Mountain off Game of Thrones. 6'6", 354 pounds, and there's not much fat on this guy. He's as lean as you're going to find for a lineman that size. It's just not a typical combination. And he plays with the nasty edge and attitude that every team wants in the offensive on the offensive line, in the trenches. He loves to maul defenders at the point of attack. He can climb to the second level, maybe not his biggest strength, but he is underrated in that area of his game. Where I'm most concerned is, even though he's got good straight line speed, he ran sub 4.9 in the 40-yard dash at 354 pounds. That's just unheard of. His lateral quickness and his agility are not good. Those are two areas that do concern me where he's a bit limited. That could be a problem working against stunts and pass protection against more athletic interior defenders as a run blocker. I have questions about how that's going to impact his game, but he is a very fun prospect that is in the mold of what Seattle's preferred at guard. Again, this stage of the draft, 131, this is a strong A for a selection. You could put him at left guard. He's played right guard at the college level, but I think he could move over the left guard spot, and he could play for the Seahawks right away on day one. Continuing Jacob's draft at 137, a nice little six-pick gap here. Going to the defensive line now, one of my favorite prospects in this class that's going to be available most likely in the middle rounds, Cam Sample. This is not a huge need for Seattle, at least right now. You've re-signed Puna Ford, Jaren Reed still under contract. But Sample has played some defensive end at Tulane, had a really solid Senior Bowl week. I don't think he's the athlete to necessarily play very many snaps off the edge in the league, but he's 273 pounds. You might be able to get him up to around 280. He's got the frame to grow into that body, become a very good interior pass rusher at the next level. He's pretty polished. He's got good length, plays with heavy hands, good short area quickness for his size. So to me, this is a very fun developmental prospect. Who knows if he's going to be able to really fulfill his potential movement inside, but that's where I see him having the best chance to be a true difference maker, especially in Seattle's 4-3 scheme. This would be a pick that I would like a lot at this stage at 137. So I'm going to give this pick a B+. Rounding out the draft for Jacob, two more selections, 176 going to running back Larry Roundtree III out of Missouri. I honestly don't know that Seattle's going to go running back again in the draft after re-signing Chris Carson. Before that move was made, I thought there was a pretty good chance that Seattle would go to the running back well if they could recoup some picks. But if they're going to, Roundtree has some of the qualities that Seattle likes back there. He's got that short, stocky build, 5'11", 216 pounds, 40 career touchdowns at Missouri, a very durable running back that's played in a lot of games. He's a downhill back that finishes with authority. My biggest issue with him as a runner, and this is the running back coach coming out of me, I don't like his lack of patience. There are times where he just doesn't read his blocks well, and he just decides, I'm just going to lower my shoulder and get downhill. And while I like the physicality and I like the aggressiveness, there are yards left in the field because of that. I would like to see him be more patient. I just don't know that he has the vision to be able to do that. And so that concerns me. He improved some as a senior, but that is something that I've got as a big red flag. I do like his running style. I like the fact that he's solid in pass protection. He'll come up and stonewall blitzers. Not a great receiver, though, either. So to me, this looks like your typical two-down back, early down back that can run between the tackles, does a lot of things well from a physicality standpoint. At this stage of the draft, it wouldn't be a bad pick. I'd say a C-plus is probably what I'd go because I don't see running back being a big need. He's not a player that I'm as high on as some because I do see some issues with his patience and ability to read blocks, which are crucial as a running back, especially when you get to the NFL level. Nonetheless, again, he fits a lot of what Seattle's looking for in the backfield. And then closing this draft out at pick 250, Taron Jackson out of Coastal Carolina. Again, this is a player I'd be surprised if he's still available. I know a lot of people, a lot of draft experts have him going in this range. He's not a prospect that's getting a lot of love from a lot of the big-name scouting departments. But again, this is a player every time I watched Coastal Carolina, it just looked like an SEC player was playing for Coastal Carolina. He's a specimen, not necessarily cut, but just a thick, powerful dude, huge legs. There's some discipline issues at times in terms of defending the run. He can lose his gap integrity sometimes. He's going to need some refinement as a pass rusher to be able to get off blocks. He needs to enhance his pass rushing counters because he isn't the most explosive athlete. He's not a guy that's going to consistently win upfield as a speed rusher. That's not his game. But he took over games at the college level. He has the ability to rush from the three tech. I think he's got the potential to be a guy that could do a little bit of in and out action, sliding around the line, especially in Seattle's scheme. And that positional versatility is going to help him a lot. There's going to be questions about his athletic traits. He also has a fairly lengthy injury history at the college level. So teams are going to be looking into that as well. How healthy is this player? Can we plan on him being reliable for us? But this has the potential to be a gem in the seventh round, getting a player like Taron Jackson. You give him the proper coaching, you put him in the right scheme where he can use that versatility rushing inside and out, like Seattle's scheme. I think he's a player that could end up having a very successful NFL career. That has a chance to be a very good pick in the seventh round, so I'm giving it a B+. Thanks again to Jacob Dyer for his entry. And again, Jacob, make sure to reach out to us at Locked_Seahawks on Twitter to claim your prize. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on our Tuesday show, Rob Rang will return, and the two of us will break down the latest in Seahawks free agent news, including unsigned veterans who could still be good fits and come at an affordable price for the Seahawks. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks.